Welcome to Real Estate Investing for Women. On this show, you will learn how to create wealth through real estate the blissful way. That means with very little stress and very little time. We talk about strategies, mindset, heartset, money smarts, resources, and so much more to ensure you're able to create the success you most deeply desire. Now, here's your host, Monica Sawyer.
Today, I am so excited to welcome to the show Kimberly Hesterkey. Did I get that right, Kim?
Don't worry about it. It's Kesterkey.
Okay. Kimberly is the founder of the W2 Landlord Community and has over 17 years of experience managing her rental portfolio from a distance. Kim built a six-figure cash-flowing rental portfolio all while working at a full-time corporate sales job, raising a now 9-year-old daughter and managing her properties herself. Through that experience, Kimberly has created effective processes that resulted in only one eviction during the 17 years and very few vacancies. In 2019, she finally hired a property manager. In 2020, started a Facebook community for real estate investors with full-time jobs. And finally, in 2022, last year, quit her corporate sales job in order to focus on her real estate business full-time. Wow, that's so exciting. She now works with coaching clients to help them build foundations in place to hit their financial independence goals and confidently invest in a real estate strategy that aligns with their strengths. Hello, Kim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Monica. It's so good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. We've been on a couple of other panels together with real estate organizations. So it's so much fun to finally have Kim to meet you guys, ladies, and get to share her with you. So thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
Kim, it's really impressive that you have quit your job and now you're full into real estate. But how did you get started?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So I got started back in 2006. I purchased my first home. And if you remember that time, it was just such a buzz. It was the responsible thing to do. Everybody was buying a house, whether we had money or not. I was about 25 years old at the time. And I purchased my first property in Augusta, Georgia. That's where I was living. I was working there. And fast forward to 2008, we all know what happened. The economy crashed. And at the same time was transferred to the Atlanta market, which is about 3 hours away from Augusta, for my sales job. Really, I became an accidental landlord. At that time, I decided to put tenants in place, rent the property, and I managed everything from a distance, which back then it really was unheard of to coordinate everything via phone, email, not be on site for all of those tasks and things. But I started to gain my confidence. And over the years, I started acquiring a duplex here, a triplex there, and really started building my portfolio. Then when 2019 came along, I decided to hire a property manager. I had about 18 units at the time. And that's really how I got started. And then the consistency is really what helped me build my portfolio over time.
Ladies, before we get into the meat of this episode, let's have a quick word from our sponsor. If your idea of asset protection and tax mitigation is setting up a simple LLC and family trust structure, you could be leaving your business, real estate, and personal assets completely exposed. Imagine instead being able to take advantage of the bulletproof asset protection tools formerly reserved for the ultra wealthy. If you'd like to mitigate or eliminate your capital gains taxes while protecting your assets from predatory litigation, visit blissfulinvestor.com/trusts. That's plural. There, you will find out more in a free recording with the world's foremost expert on a new kind of trust structure you've probably never heard of. This is a true generational wealth building business and personal asset protection and tax mitigation structure dating back to the founding of our country and is still used today. Just go to blissfulinvestor.com/trusts to find out more. It's free. Are all of your properties in Augusta then?
Not anymore. Okay. Originally they were, but then as I started learning different strategies and investment, just different strategies and investments, I really branched out to other markets. I have properties all over. I have one in New York. I have a couple in North Dakota. I've really, in terms of managing secondary markets, I've really expanded my portfolio that way.
Interesting. So how did you hire a property manager? Do they do everything remotely?
The property manager that I have is for my Augusta units. That's where a bulk of my units are. And then the other properties that I own, I self-manage.
Got it. Very, very good. Good clarifying information.
<Thank you.
laughs> Okay. Talk to us about how you define a secondary market.
I define a secondary market as a market that is typically about 150,000 in population. It may have 3 to 5 industries within that market. Really what that tells me is that there's a lot of support in that economy that would support people to move in, to rent, to buy, all of those different things. A secondary market, also, I take a look and just make sure that it's a place that people want to live, that people would want to move to. And the reason why I look at 3 to 5 industries is really because you don't want to put all of your eggs in one industry. For instance, if that corporation or whatever that industry is, because every market is different, leaves, you don't want to be caught with a property that depreciates very, very quickly. Those are some of the key things that I look for.
Okay. And how do you find those markets?
There's a variety of different ways. There's a free tool that I use online. It's called Neighborhood Scout. Let's say I'm reading an article online and it says, oh, top 50 best places to invest. I see that all over the place all the time. Now, if I'm curious about it, I'll go on to Neighborhood Scout. It's a free tool. I'll poke around. I'll put the city in and I'll start looking at the different things to see if it's a place that I'd want to dive in deeper and actually invest.
Okay, awesome. Why did you decide to do secondary markets?
I stumbled upon it with Augusta. Augusta, Georgia, I would say, is a secondary market. And as I was building my portfolio, I just looked around and I looked at all of the competition that a primary market brings, whether it's hedge funds moving in, whether it's just a lot of investors competing for the same properties. And then also, too, for me, the secondary market really fit my budget personally, because I was at the time doing conventional loans. That would be 20% down after you get a certain amount under your belt. And really the price tag was a lot more attractive to me. And then it just turned out that basically what I was putting in as a down payment to what the rents were really worked out, where I was still cash flowing, still making money, still getting the appreciation. It may not have been as broad as, say, let's use the Atlanta market, for example, but it was where I could afford it. I could continuously do it and still see really good results.
Got it. You fell into that. How would you say other people can get started in a new market?
Yeah, absolutely. If there's a market that somebody hears about, or there's a lot of buzz, or maybe it's not so much buzz, but they personally know family that lives there, knows a little bit about it, then I would say start doing your research. And so then the question is, gosh, how do I research if I live half a country away? Basically, what I said a little bit earlier is I'll go on neighborhoodscout.com, and it really gives a lot of information just in their free tool. And I'm not affiliated with it. That's what I've used. And you can drill into different zip codes. You can check crime rates. You can check where the industries are or what kind of industries. And you can then take that information, walk over to Zillow, and then start seeing what the rents are. If it's starting to look like a market that really matches the type of tenant avatar that you're renting to, or if it's matching all of the different checkboxes that you have, then it's one to start exploring further by maybe calling some property managers or getting on the local city Facebook group and just start really diving in that way.
Talk to me a little bit about calling property managers. I've heard that before. It's a great tool to utilize, get to know new markets, right? Tell me a little bit about how you manage that process.
Yes, I personally did this for a property that I was looking at in Port Charlotte, Florida, and I ended up buying it. I had never been to Port Charlotte. Love the area, now knowing more about it. But what I did before I put an offer in and closed on the property, I called a couple property managers. And I just gave them the details of the property. And I said, this is what I'm thinking of renting it at. What are your thoughts? And they really gave some good advice. And I was even looking at maybe renting a little bit lower than I should, which was nice. I was able to up my rate and then learn a little bit more about how snowbirds are coming down. And it just more information than I ever would have known. And if you think about it, property managers, they're really going to obviously know the area because they have dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of properties that they're managing. If they understand who you're renting to and what your investment strategy is, they can really give you good advice.
Do you ever feel obligated to hire them?
If I personally buy there, then yes, I would, because I think it's a fair exchange that way.
With that Florida property, you did hire a property management company.
Yes, we ended up hiring that property management.
Okay, nice. Okay, yeah. Very good. What strategies would you say work well for managing at a distance? Some of the properties you have a property manager for, right? Mm-hmm. But what are some of your strategies for being far away and still managing properties?
So for my rentals, where it's more of a landlord-tenant relationship, long-term rental, those properties are managed by a property manager. And then I also have another strategy in place where I will acquire a property and then I'm in essence the bank. What I'll do is I'll buy the property and then sell it either with rent-to-own terms and or if depending on what price I get that property, seller financing, where it might be a land contract, land installment, contract for deed. I've done a wide variety of different ones. I've even done a seller finance where at the closing table, the deed transfers. So there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. What I really like about that and why I think it's very attainable to invest in secondary markets anywhere is you don't have to do the maintenance. You're in essence the bank. The biggest thing you've got to make sure is obviously you collect the payments. And there's loan processing companies that can do that, or loan servicing companies. I think it's a better term for that. And they're only 10, 15 bucks a month. It's one of those things that, you know, if you're looking for creative ways to get out of your market, but you don't want all the hassle of the maintenance and the risk, I think selling properties as the bank is a really good way to go.
Okay. That was a lot of information.
It was.
First of all, with the loan servicing companies, if they need to collect late rents or anything like that, do they charge extra or is it just kind of that flat fee?
Yes, you have to put your terms up front. Whatever your terms are, if it's after the fifth, you collect 10%, you've got to give them that. But that is how they process it.
And then what happens if someone doesn't pay?
Again, it depends on how you structure it. So if you structure it more in a contract for deed format where the deed transfers after everything is paid off, then you can actually go through an eviction process. You don't necessarily have to foreclose. If you structure the deal that the deed transfers at closing, then you would have to go through a foreclosure. And then keep in mind, every state is different. So if this is something you're interested in, just talk to your local title agency or your real estate attorney. Really understand what works for your state because everybody's slightly different.
When you mentioned that there were several different ways to be the bank, you mentioned three right off the top of your head. And most of I understood everything you said, but most of my listeners probably will not. Sure. Could you break that down a little bit more?
Sure, absolutely. The first one is contract for deed. And I like that one because if you just imagine somebody goes and gets a car loan, you don't get that title of the loan until you pay it off. Basically, that's what you're offering as the sellers. You don't transfer the deed until it's paid off. You could amortize that for 30 years, 15 years, whatever you want to do. The deed transfers after the fact. What's nice about that strategy is that you get a lot of the tax benefits. You get good cash flow. There's some really good strategies to that. That's one of them.
And do you take a down payment for that one?
I do.
And do you have an idea on percentage of what you take or is it a flat rate? What do you normally do on that?
What I do personally is 10% down. I've tried a wide variety of different ones. I've done, depending on the area, 2,000 down. I've done just a wide variety, but 10% down, I believe it attracts a person that wants a loan, wants a mortgage, and is going to pay on time. It's a really good qualifier in my opinion.
Ashley, what kinds of rates do you charge? Because you're the rent to own, they're paying principal and interest, right? So what kinds of rates do you normally charge?
It all just depends. Usually I take what the prime is and add a couple points to it because there is a premium to being able to offer the terms. If they could go down and get a conventional loan, then hey, go get the conventional loan. But as the investor, we're taking on a little bit more of the risk, so we can charge a little bit of a higher interest rate.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. All right, now go to the second strategy.
Great. So then the land installment is another way of saying contract for deed. So that's really how I clump those two in together. And then the rent to own, that one's a pretty cool, unique way to do it too, because you collect a non-refundable option fee upfront. And what that is also a down payment, but again, non-refundable. It'll go against the final principal. But at the same time, as the investor, you can manage the monthly payments any way you want. It's not a straight amortization like a contract for deed or land installment is. A rent to own, you can charge the rent. And then as the investor, you can choose how much does that rent payment go towards principal. At the very end, they have what we term a balloon payment. And the non-refundable option fee is obviously taken out of that principal. And whatever you decided as the investor with the tenant buyer, how much each month was going to be applied to it. Rent to own, I think, is a really cool strategy because, again, there's a lot of exit strategies. They can cash you out after 2 to 4 years. You can redo the lease for another 2 to 4 years, however long you want, and then negotiate with them how much of that payment is actually going to principal.
Interesting. They're really similar. The contract to own and the rent to own are similar, but there's some really subtle nuances, it feels mm-hmm. like. Is that true?
It is. And it just all depends on what your comfort level is, what your state, what the different rules are for evictions and for contracts. Because again, I'm operating where I operate. The rules vary. So just understand your specific areas, what my advice would be.
Got it. Okay. If you were starting now, starting all over, what would you do?
Now, I love that question because I just did a Facebook Live about that. Because when you look at the way that the economy is now, it's completely different than what it was at 2006, 2008. You could get conventional loans at very low interest rates. Nowadays, what I personally would do is I would purchase a property and I'm doing this right now, and I would basically flip it without doing really much of anything. But what I'm doing is I'm flipping the paper, is I'm offering either contract for deed, I'm offering rent to own, and then I'm holding that property as long as I can in those specific terms. And what I like about that is, especially where I came along in my investing journey, is I like to take a more conservative approach. It's just, I guess I'm boring that way, but I like the conservative consistency. And I really feel like this approach, you know what your cash flow is going to be on a monthly basis, as long as they pay. There's alligators in every water. But let's say they always pay, you're getting that cash flow and maintenance isn't eroding your profits. And I think that's really a great way for people to start and to really understand real estate investing.
Great. So what kinds of properties are you buying, or how are you finding the properties rather?
Yeah. So I've found them in a variety of ways. So right now where I'm getting my properties currently is I'm sending out letters to sellers. And are basically people that they own the property, but they don't live in the property. And I'm just sending out letters on this is what I can offer. And what I've been just acquiring properties that way, slowly, but acquiring them that way.
Okay. And how are you determining the sale price for the properties?
Well, it's a combination of, in terms of what I'm selling it after I buy it, it's a combination of just looking at the comps and then also knowing that I'm providing a premium for people to purchase, not having to go to the bank. I'll take a look at comps and I pretty much price it where I'm still making some profit, but it's still within line of what the local comps are.
Let's say, for instance, you have a contract that's 5 years and you're selling this property with a 5-year contract. In 5 years, that property would have appreciated. You're basically giving up that appreciation in favor of a little bit of a higher interest rate. Is that what I'm hearing?
Not entirely. And it's what is reasonable. We'll take this. Let's take the Florida property, for example. Okay. Looking at the local comps, the higher comp was around $600,000. What my business partner and I is, we took a look at it and we're like, let's price it more around $599. Let's just see if we get some interest. And we got a tremendous amount of interest. Now, we were able to purchase it at a lower price, just the way that we were able to work with the seller and work with the wholesaler that brought that property to us. We still made a profit that way. I guess in that sort of sense, you just never know what's going to happen in 5 years. So I guess you could say you are foregoing some appreciation for the higher interest rate, but we still ended up making money. It was one of those win-wins where we were making money. We were able to get a tenant buyer in that was happy with it. And really, at the same time, just everyone is winning out of the situation.
Okay, very interesting. You just quit your job last year to go Yes. full-time into real estate. We're going to talk about this, ladies. We're going to talk about this in a deep dive in Extra, but could you give us high level sort of what it took for you to make that transition? Because I know so many of my ladies are wanting to make that transition, but don't really even know. It's scary. How do you get started even thinking about that?
Absolutely. For the record, it maybe because I'm a slow learner, it takes me a while. It took me 2 years after I decided I wanted to do it. And the reason why is because I put some processes in place. I wanted to put some goal marks in and I wanted to hit certain things before I felt that I would be ready to leave my corporate job. I was doing well. It just was something that I wanted to do real estate full time. So that's really where I was at. What I ended up doing is I first took a look at my portfolio in its entirety. And then I took a look to see which ones are the more profitable ones, which are not. And then I sold the ones that were lagging a bit, 1031 exchanged into some higher profitable property. That took a little bit of time. And then I had to take a look at what my true expenses were, not the bottom of the barrel if I'm just surviving expenses, but I wanted to know what does my life cost when I'm doing the things I want to do, I'm going where I want to go, I'm living, feeling free and abundant. Wanted to know what that number was. And then I wanted to make sure that my cash flow either hit that or was there enough that if I had to do some active income, that I still was living the life that I wanted to live. There's more things that I did, but those were two major things I wanted to make sure happened before leaving.
Okay, got it. All that prep and stuff, we are going to talk about that in Extra, and I'm excited about that. Nobody's talked about that on that show. We've met a lot of people that made that transition, but they haven't talked about that process that actually happens between being a W-2 employee and being a real estate investor. I'm super excited about that. So ladies, we will talk about that in Extra. This has been awesome. Is there anything else you want to share that I haven't asked about?
If people want to get in touch with me, I do have a free Facebook group. It's really the best place to go and have investing conversations with other people that have full-time jobs. It's called Real Estate Investors with Full-Time Jobs at Facebook. I just wanted to make it just obvious. So that's the name of the group. And then they can also come to my website, thew2landlord.com. I've got different resources up there as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. Are you ready for our three rapid fire questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Kim, tell us a super tip on getting started investing in real estate.
I would say don't overanalyze, because I think taking action and jumping in sometimes is the better way to go. Because what I love about real estate is there's dozens of exit strategies that even if you feel your plan A isn't working out the way you wanted it, there's a lot of different ways that you can still monetize and may earn a profit on that deal.
Nice. And then what would you say is one strategy to be successful as a real estate investor?
I would say just consistency. It's not always about the big home runs. A lot of times it's about taking a deal that you know you're going to make money on and let that be okay. It doesn't necessarily have to be the big grand slam, because you'll get those from time to time, just like in corporate sales, you always get those big sales, but it's the small wins, it's the consistent wins that really help you build your portfolio and your net worth.
Got it. And then what is one daily practice, Kim, that you do that you would say contributes to your success?
I'm constantly networking, and I think that the group helps. And when I say networking, it doesn't necessarily have to be sending DMs. It's just more being on the Facebook groups, just dropping, if there's questions, answering them. If you see somebody who's a lender, just had a conversation today with somebody who lends in all 50 states. We ended up having a good conversation on the phone, just connecting with people. You just never know who's going to approach you with an opportunity, or you might even be able to help them and send them a lead. It's this particular business. It's such a win-win industry if we're all supporting each other.
I love that. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much. You gave us so much information in this bite-sized episode. I loved that. Thank you.
Thank you. No, this has been really great, Monica. I'm glad that we were able to connect and thank you for the invite.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure. And ladies, thank you for joining Kim and I for this portion of the show. We've got more right on Extra. We're going to be doing a deep dive on how to prepare for that exit out of your full-time job into becoming a real estate investor full-time. And what's fun about becoming a real estate investor full-time is that it's not full-time, right? You get so much time freedom once you make that transition. So we're going to be talking about exactly how Kim did that. From her high-paying corporate job to real estate investors. We're going to do that in Extra. So if you are subscribed already, stay tuned, right? It'll show up on your app. If you're not but would like to be, go to realestateinvestingforwomenextra.com and you can subscribe there. And for those of you that are leaving us now, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to seeing you next time. And until then, remember, goals without action are just dreams. So get out there, take action, and create the life your heart deeply desires. I'll see you soon. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you'd like to find out more about how to become a blissful millionaire, go to blissfulinvestor.com. See you next time.